Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, and welcome to the Dudes on Hockey podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, welcome back from the wilderness.
Thanks, dude.
You've been wandering around the John Muir Trail with a backpack and a canteen and a bottle of bear spray, just looking for some trouble, eating mystery berries and pooping in the woods, dude. Right. Tell us all about it.
These mushrooms can't be bad for me.
Wait, I'm having a hallucination. The shark's eye, John Scott. This just can't be real.
It's a bad dream. Tell me, spirit guide, what should I do?
Did you go into some sort of sweat hut and do ayahuasca?
No, I wish I did. That would be really cool. I did go to the top of Half Dome, though.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Very nice.
That was fun.
And what did you see?
I saw a fair amount of smoke from the recent fire.
Did you look down and see Drew Doughty raising the cup?
No. Oh. Thank God for that. We'll be seeing that soon enough.
Oh.
At the beginning of the season.
The banner will be raised soon. We'll see the Kings in LA on opening night. We'll also see the Kings at the outdoor game, dude, at Levi Stadium.
Levi Stadium. The Sharks finally secure an outdoor game. I guess the ice quality was pretty good in the Ducks versus Kings game last year. And I think everybody is more or less pacified that they can actually get a real game on. Of course, sightlines are another thing. But what, February 21st? Is that that's the date of the first Sharks outdoor game? Yep, Levi's Stadium, February 21st. There's pre-sale going on right now. I got to figure out if I'm getting tickets or not or what I'm doing. I'm sure I'm going to try and go. But after I heard there was quite a traffic snarl at the... it wasn't the Spurs game. It was the Earthquakes game.
No, it was the Earthquakes game. I went to the first game at Levi's Stadium, Earthquakes versus Seattle Sounders MLS game. And my dad and I went, and we, you know, game starts 7:30. We're going to get there super early. Mm-hmm. We leave at 5. We don't get in the parking lot till about 6, which, you know, in the moment, I was all frustrated.
Sure.
But it really... 30, 45 minutes to get into a parking lot. It's inconvenient, but it wasn't awful. You know, it wasn't awful. I think that the signage getting into the parking was terrible. Like,
really?
I mean, it was very hard to know where to go. They posted directions on their website of how to get to the parking that were wrong.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, you know, they're like, follow these directions and you'll avoid all the traffic. And I did, and as you're doing it, they're posting signs that redirect you away from their directions.
Oh, great.
So I have no idea what was right or what you were supposed to do. The parking lot I was in, it's like A6 or something, is not a parking lot. It's a golf course that you're parking on the green.
You're parking on the lawn.
With no lights and no signage as to where your car is. So we're like dropping breadcrumbs like Hansel and Gretel to try and figure out how to get back.
Yeah.
It was an adventure. But you know, I mean, first time, and I'm sure they're gonna figure it out. The stadium's pretty cool. It definitely doesn't have the personality of
Pac Bell.
Yeah. It doesn't have the personality of the Giants baseball stadium, which is just gorgeous on the water and
or it's AT&T now.
Right.
Yeah.
It itself is just kind of a beautiful place to be. I mean, this is
the geography of AT&T is hard to beat. And Levi's is frankly fairly near the dump, isn't it not?
Right. I mean, it's right in the middle of a bunch of, tech industry companies and Great America. So
right near Alviso.
Alviso. I love you, Alviso. That's for you, Scott. The stadium's nice. It was we got club seats because we figured this would be the only time we could ever see the club level without, donating some sort of organ. So club level was nice, a ton of bars. The food was mediocre and not great, but I chalk that up to And the bartenders were like, yeah, hey, we didn't even practice. We just got here. I don't even know where the booze is.
I just showed up today. Yeah, I was here 30 minutes ago.
They were definitely winging it. I think people are going to the Niner game this weekend. And there was 40,000 people. There's going to be 60-something thousand at that Niner game. I mean, that's going to be kind of a cluster, I think.
But yeah.
The club-level seating, cushion seating, really nice. I mean, nicest chair I've ever sat in at a sporting event. You know, definitely comfortable, good sight lines. The upper deck looks like you're sitting on a slope, a ski slope, in some of those corners. I wouldn't want to sit up there.
Oh, really?
A little scary. It looked a little scary. I mean, I didn't go up there. They had the whole area closed, but it looked a little intimidating from my posh club seats. But it'd be interesting, dude. I mean,
I heard getting out of there was actually really tough. How was it getting out?
Well, we left early. I mean, because we didn't want to even
deal with it.
You know, I mean, I'm a Quakes fan, but I'm not like a diehard Quakes fan, right?
Right.
So I'm going to spare myself the 90 minutes getting out of the parking lot and miss the last 5 minutes of the game, which is what happened. We got out real fast.
Nice. Yeah, I heard, like, especially people taking light rail, which is how I would get to the stadium.
Well, yeah.
It was like 2 hours. But I think they're going to hopefully fix some of that stuff. They were talking about building a quote-unquote pocket track, which is a place where you can sort of store trains. And then when the game's over, you have a bunch more trains that you can bring into service. But still, I'm not exactly sure how they're going to service. I don't even know what their expected load is on light rail. 10,000 people?
It was an issue, and I know trains were breaking down. Air conditioning was breaking on the trains.
Man.
I mean, it's light rail. I mean, let's be honest. No one uses light rail, really, except for when you're trying to get to a Sharks game. That's not exactly the subway, right?
Fun urban policy fact. They measure like the efficacy of public transportation by how much of the money that people pay make up for the cost. You know, because there's no public transportation system in the country that makes back in fares what it costs to run the system. New York City subway is the best in the country. Mm-hmm. I think, what is it, $2.50 now to take the subway?
Right.
And I think they make back 80 or 90% of the cost. And, you know, the government sort of picks up the rest through taxes. VTA is the worst in the nation. Seriously, there's people that just freeload on that all day long. I've seen them. I've ridden the light rail dozens and dozens of times. I've seen them check tickets like 2-3 times ever.
Right, right.
And so you know that, like, at least there's not that many people on the trains, and the people that are on the trains aren't paying. So it's really great.
Yeah, it's not exact. We'll see. I mean, this is an opportunity for them to fix that, right? I mean, it's going to be widely used. A lot of people are going to use that to get to the game. But in terms of the Sharks playing at Levi's Stadium, great opportunity and excited for, you know, the fans and the city and, you know, great exposure for Sharks, and I hope it's a cool event. You know, it certainly is a cool stadium. I think my only last comment would be that the concourses are very wide in areas, but they are extremely narrow in other areas. Trying to get around the sideline area by the club seats, there's an aisleway that is maybe 6 to 8 feet wide.
What?
And it's extremely small. And I'm not sure what they were thinking. I mean,
like, it's just a huge backup there.
It was
to get
a huge bottleneck. I mean, try. Well, people are trying to use that as a thoroughfare, which they can't.
Oh.
But there's no one or nothing saying that you can't do that. So you've got this congestion of people either trying to get to their seats or just trying to get around the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a problem. So
hopefully
they'll figure that out.
Dude, we do have a question about the outdoor game. Tom says, can this mean that the TV deal has been renegotiated?
No.
No?
I mean, we seem to get an inference from Mark Purdy's article that this could help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this would be a bone to Comcast and to the Sharks to try and work out some of the financial issues, but I haven't read any sort of report that says that the Sharks TV deal has been renegotiated. I think if it had been, Purdy would have been all over that.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, I'm not quite sure how those two things are related, because this is going to be on NBC. It's going to be televised on NBCSN. So I'm not quite sure how those two things are related precisely?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It could have a ratings boon for the Sharks before and after. You know, interest in the team spikes, advertising rates go up. I mean, maybe there's some sort of correlation between that. I don't know. But you're right. It's not like it's going to be on the same channel, right?
Right, yeah. So. It's not going to be on CSN. So anyway.
But it's money coming in for the team. I mean, this is going to be a lot of money coming in.
It's going to be a lot of money coming in for the team. And I think that, you know, the financial boon is certainly going to be good. And we've certainly talked about, you know, supposed financial rumors, even the implied threat of moving the team a few weeks back and things like that. So nothing like 68,000 people paying, you know, $100 a head or whatever it's going to be on average. You know,
don't forget the parking on the golf course.
Yeah, the parking on the golf course.
$35 to park on a golf course.
And so, you know, all that's probably, you know, 4, 5, 6 times more than a Sharks would normally make on a home game. So, you know, that helps. That helps. That'll pay for John Scott. So, dude, what else is happening here in Sharks land?
Well, I mean, we talked about this a little bit, and there was an article written, again, about how, you know, Bissonnette, Perros, these guys are still out there, and the Sharks jumped on John Scott like on day 3 of free agency. I don't get it, dude. I'm so confused by the whole thing. I don't want to go round and round with this, but
yeah,
the Sharks are now in a, you know, roster status quo point. I think they are essentially done. We haven't seen any real movement except for a few, you know, fringe signings, right? I know one thing I want to talk about is, you know, Michael Delzato, dude.
Yeah. What do you get? A 1.25 somewhere?
He goes to the Flyers.
Right, Flyers.
For 1.25 1 year. And this is a guy who 3 years ago was being looked at as
the future number one for the New York Rangers.
And he has fallen so far off the map. I mean, clearly, there's more to his story than we know.
I can't help but think that there is some sort of either locker room issue with this guy, off-ice issue with this guy. It's hard to go from a player of that ability and that kind of promise and anticipation to a guy this far down. I don't know if his on-ice, you know, obviously I haven't seen him play every night. But usually it's pretty hard to tank that quickly. I can't help but think, and this is obviously purely speculation, that there's something else going on. There's some sort of personal relationship thing with this guy. Either he thinks he deserves the number one job automatically, or maybe he doesn't practice as hard as people want, or something.
Ah, the irony that the Preds cut bait with him but signed Mike Ribeiro.
I know. Yeah, you right? Know. Right?
I've read nothing that says that he's a problem. It's just
me either.
Strange that he's gone from being so widely regarded to
the next Kyle Quincy.
Right. I mean, who actually has salvaged his career a little bit.
Amazingly,
you know?
Yes.
And this guy maybe being with the Flyers.
They need D. Lord knows.
They need D, you know, might, you know, save his career. I guess I look at the Sharks situation and I go, well, if you're going to give Scott Hannon $1 million,
right,
why don't you give this guy $1 million?
Seriously.
What's the deal? Like, why keep Scott Hannon around to be a glorified tutor instead of taking a chance on a 24, 25-year-old guy who has the potential to be at least what Jason Demers is?
Right. Oh, yeah.
If not better,
if he
realizes his potential. Why not take a risk on that, especially if you say you're going with youth? That's a free agent addition that makes sense for a team that's maybe looking more a couple years down the road than looking at this next year. Mm-hmm. So another thing, puzzling non-move that has gotten under my skin a little bit, dude. I see you're looking at an email. Speaking of getting under your skin.
Yeah. Here's David. So after the playoffs have finished, free agency, the draft have passed by, I'm not quite sure how to feel about the Sharks in the coming season. Doesn't feel like much has changed apart from John Scott arriving. Should we expect a late move to get Douglas Murray back to play alongside John Scott? Would they be good listeners to the coaches if that's what it will take to win? Just when you think it's all over, Danny Heatley appears at the Ducks. OT goal coming up for Heatley at the tank, yeah. So should we be thinking that the Sharks' glass is half full as the Sharks have a strong team in the regular season, or half empty as so many teams got better and the Kings and the Hawks were so good? And what do you think is a realistic target for the Sharks next season, playoffs or just not to tank in the West? Go Sharks, go Spurs. Okay, Douglas Murray, I'm hoping that's a joke. I'm hoping that's a joke. I think of all the players that we've mentioned so far, Douglas Murray probably has the least chance to play in the NHL. And he suffered quite a bit of ire from the Canadiens fans last year. And if you look at some of his stats, especially the advanced stats, are absolutely horrid. Certainly here's a guy who's a fan favorite in San Jose, and I do have a soft spot in my heart for Douglas Murray. But I think the chance of him coming back to the Sharks is about zero. And the chances of him playing in the NHL period are probably 10% or less, if I had to estimate. I don't think Douglas Murray has the kind of game anymore that will survive in the NHL. He's too slow. He was once good positionally, but now he's just so slow he can't make up for it.
Right.
And it's unfortunate, and I wish him the best, and I would love to see him reconstitute his career like Kyle Quincy, but I think the chances are is that he's done. He's done in the NHL.
Unless someone wants to convert him into a John Scott style forward, you know, I mean, that's possible. I mean, he's a tough dude. He's a good fighter, and he's a, by all accounts, a good guy in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe someone signs him for the minimum and puts him on the wing and says, play 2 minutes and make sure our star player doesn't die.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that might be, but those players are like dinosaurs now, except for on Doug Wilson's watch.
Yep.
He loves them.
I know. It's very strange.
Dude, what do you think about the question? You know, is the glass half full or glass half empty?
Given all the stuff we've talked about, I have to say the glass is half empty at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty clear things didn't turn out quite the way Doug Wilson wanted. I think he probably expected or hoped to move one of the two big players by now in Thornton and Marleau. And I think these guys are sort of hanging around his neck like a ball and chain at the moment. It may work out in the end, but as we've said before, I don't think the Sharks compare favorably at all to either the Kings or the Blackhawks, and certainly probably not the Ducks either. So I'd say the top situation that we're looking at right now is we're looking at a 3 seed in the Pacific in the playoffs, and probably not a lot of hope in terms of advancement. So I could easily see the Sharks missing the playoffs depending on how things go. I think that's certainly possible.
You look at the other moves that the teams in the Pacific have done, you think, well, Phoenix probably didn't really get better.
No.
Right? Calgary is Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
Edmonton, it remains to be seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, how much Pouliot and...
Well, they were so bad, it's hard not to get better at that point.
I mean, one thing that happened while we were off the air is, you know, Edmonton has now hired an analytics guy.
Yeah,
right?
They hired Tyler Dello, which I think is really cool. So that's interesting. The guy from what's the name of that site? I can't remember. Oh, I just read an article about it like 3 hours ago. Anyway,
so these Pouliot Fane kind of signings point that maybe they're looking in a little bit of a different direction at not big sexy names, but mm-hmm. you know, quality hockey players that can help their club in other ways, trading for a Nikitin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're laughing at the prices they're paying for them. You know, these kind of role players, maybe they're going to make the Oilers realize some of the potential that we think that they have. So that's a team with a question mark.
Yeah.
You know, are they going to take a step forward finally, or are they going to be kind of bottom feeders like they've been?
If they find a way to balance their roster even a little bit, I think they'll be quite a bit better.
Vancouver?
Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah.
So, you know, the Sharks clearly are third to the Kings and Ducks. But do they have a, you know, tight grip on that third spot?
Absolutely not.
No.
Yeah.
But I think it's theirs right now. but it could quickly go away.
I think it's theirs by default.
And the troubling thing is that the Central has gotten significantly better.
Mm-hmm.
All those teams got better, I think. You know, so Minnesota's better. St. Louis,
mm-hmm.
adding Stastny. Nashville, you know, has made some efforts, and I think LaViolette's going to bring a different style to that team.
Mm-hmm.
Blackhawks are the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
And the Avs, I don't know if they're better, but they're still good.
Yeah, they're still good.
And Dallas is better.
Dallas is definitely better.
So it wouldn't be inconceivable for the two wild cards to come out of that division.
It's true.
So,
although with so many good teams, you'd think they, you know, and you play all the teams in your own division so many times, you'd think the top two teams hopefully would beat up the rest of the teams.
Sure, they might just all rack up wins against the Pacific.
It's true. Pacific was one of the better divisions.
I'm going to say half empty too, dude. I don't feel excited.
It's not going to be half full until we have an idea of where some of these young guys are going to go. Like Mirko Mueller.
Yeah. Is he going to make the team?
And
is he going to play?
And Godolbin and these guys.
Yeah, is Godolbin going to make the team? I mean, these are huge question marks. And if Godolbin makes the team, is he going to play 15 minutes a night, or is he going to play five with Andrew Desjardins?
Right.
You know, that's a waste of time.
Right.
You know?
The Sharks have, to their credit, and the Sharks certainly need defending at this point because I know a lot of people are piling on, the Sharks have not traditionally done that sort of thing. They haven't, like, they didn't put Matt Nieto on the fourth line, right? They didn't put him on the fourth line and play him 6 minutes.
That's true, but
they put him on the second line and they had him play. So they don't have a real bad history of this kind of stuff where they take young guys and they say, okay, you're going to play with the kinds of players that you really shouldn't be playing with, and you're going to be playing against the kinds of players you really shouldn't be playing against.
That's true.
And we're going to evaluate you based on that. Luckily, the Sharks have not done that.
Well, hopefully they will continue that trend, because if you're going to truly evaluate Mueller and Godolbin, mm-hmm. and, you know, Taylor Doherty and Tennyson, any of these guys who, you know, based on all the Worcester writers that we hear from, you know, Tennyson's a sack of garbage. So I mean, they hate him so much, you know.
They hate Tennyson?
Yeah. I'm remembering some of the comments, I sure doesn't seem like people are too high on him. So he's not coming across as a super studly prospect in their eyes from the AHL level. Training camp might be the most interesting part of the year.
Yeah, it's true.
It might be, because we'll see if some of these young guys win some spots. And we could see some veterans go at that point, too. It could be other teams find injuries and they do need a player like Burrish or Tyler Kennedy, who are guys who right now, I don't see where they're going to play. Andrew Desjardins, too. I mean, I think actually he probably has the most trade value about any of those three guys. It's cheap.
Mostly because of the money, yeah.
He's cheap, but he's a better player than those other two.
You'd rather have Andrew Desjardins than Kennedy?
Right. What did Tyler Kennedy do last year, dude? He didn't do jack.
He didn't do jack. Okay.
At least Desjardins is a serviceable fourth line center.
Yeah, and it seems like Kennedy's a bit of a tweener at the moment.
I don't even know what he is, dude.
Yeah, yeah. Are we? You want to talk about Spurs, dude? Because there's really no other Sharks
news.
Yeah,
let's do it.
So our buddy Andy from Great Britain chided us, saying the Spurs are not the EPL equivalent of the Sharks.
Do this in a British accent, too.
No, no. I'll sound like Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins.
Step in time.
Make your knees
never need a
time.
Reason, never need a rhyme.
Oh, jeez.
Step in time. Come on, let's get up the chimney.
Hear that sound, dude? Everybody's turning off the podcast.
No, everybody's loving this.
Spurs are an arrogant team who think that they should be challenging to the top four by right because they won the FA Cup a few times. As a result, go through managers and players because they're not challenging for the title. Harry Redknapp was the only one to make the competitive, was discarded far too quickly after a poor second half of one season without a proper plan in place. The Sharks are still one of the new boys in the NHL, playing with a chip on their shoulder, fighting the East Coast bias, struggling to attract big-name free agents, but quietly doing things the right way. Sticking with GMs, managers, since following them closely since 2007, I've been impressed with the classy way a lot of their business is done. Dude? Do you agree with this statement?
It's a lovely holiday with Mary. Because Mary is the girl that we love. Well, I mean, we started following Spurs at near the end of the Redknapp era.
Right.
It was Champions League, and it was exciting. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know enough about it to... I mean, Daniel Levy seems like kind of a tool, who's the chairman of the Spurs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they've gone through four coaches now in 4 years.
Right.
It's pretty ridiculous.
That is kind of dumb.
And, yeah, it seems pretty fickle, right? I mean,
yeah.
Redknapp has a disappointing half a year, and they just... ditch him.
They ditch him.
Yeah. And the guy who kind of brought them back to success, patience is, there is no patience. In the EPL in general, it seems like there's no patience.
Yeah, I mean, look at Man U. They ditched
Moyes. Yeah, well, Moyes was terrible. I mean, like...
but still.
When you look at already how Man U has changed just in the preseason, like they're going to be top four for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you could just see how they changed away. But... I mean, they've got to give this new manager a chance. Like, you've got to give him a chance. Like,
who, the Argentinian guy you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, even if Spurs finish mid-table, if they finish 10th, you can't can him. You can't can him after a year. You got to give him a chance.
But they did get they got Yedlin, right, dude?
Yeah. First, not first, but they've got Brad Friedel. They've had Clint Dempsey. But a young American player, like a budding star in MLS, Yedlin. He's really good. I mean,
yeah,
exciting. I hope he plays. You know, he's going to stay in MLS through the end of the year and go over. And so if any of you are still looking to jump on the Spurs bandwagon with us, we had another American player coming over to Spurs. Exciting times.
It's good times.
Exciting times.
Dude, then Andy turns glass half empty here. He says, unfortunately, I fear this is changing. It looks like the root cause is the change of ownership. I think DW was held in such high regard by the previous owners. He could do what he wanted, worked well from a position of power. However, I think Hasso Plattner has put a lot of pressure on him. He hasn't responded well. The backtracking has been a direct result of this. My bet is that as part of an end of season meeting, Wilson assured Plattner that he would be able to move Marlowe and Thornton so he could let Boyle go and would do the rebuild. When they dug their heels in, Plattner was not impressed, so that they stayed, he would expect the Sharks to make the playoffs. Suddenly going from rebuild to fighting to be competitive, Wilson under pressure went down with the Scott Hannon signings. It's disappointing to watch the Sharks going down the short-term decisions, making the same mistakes that the Spurs make, so maybe you are right. They're actually on their way to becoming the equivalent of Spurs.
Oh, wow. Interesting hypothesis.
Yeah,
dude.
It's an interesting
what
take
do you think,
on it.
What do you think of this story that's laid out here, this script by our friend Andy?
I don't know what to think. Plattner's only been the owner for about 10 minutes, so we don't know how involved he is or how involved he isn't. We know he certainly cares about the team. It seems like some of the... certainly the Remenda thing seems to come from the top. Certainly the Ice Girls thing seems to come from the top, but we don't really have a lot of evidence that some of these things that Doug Wilson wanted to do or said he would do is coming from the top. So I'm going to withhold judgment on that kind of stuff. And I think Doug Wilson honestly thought that the team should rebuild, and he honestly thought he could move Thornton, and it just didn't turn out. If you want to blame him for that, then you should. And if you think he should be fired for that, I understand that position. But I don't see anything that to me says, oh, obviously the owner is meddling here. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I do think the changes in the wind, though, in the last 4 months can't be ignored, you know, in terms of the dramatic change in philosophy, all the weird things that are happening in terms of organizationally. But what influence Plattner has over Doug Wilson's construction of the team, we just can't possibly know that. But I do think you're right. In some way, Wilson thought he could do what he wanted to do, and he wasn't able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to cost him his job in the end?
It's very possible. It's very possible. I mean, the next 3 years could be very interesting for the Sharks. I mean, if these two guys stick around... and basically prevent the Sharks from you know, promoting some of the younger players, that could be a real problem.
But this, and I think we talked about this at the end of the playoffs, if that becomes the case and this all just goes straight to hell, the Sharks team is bad, Thornton and Marlowe are cancers and albatrosses on the team, then you have to fire Doug Wilson and bring in somebody else who will tell them, we don't want you, which Doug Wilson won't do.
Right.
He'll say, I think maybe, gentlemen, it might be best if we have a parting of the ways and I'll look for the best possible home. You have someone else come in and say, you're gone.
You get out.
You're out of here. I'll send you to the minors and keep your cap hit on. I don't care.
Right. You know, well, they got no moves. No moves mean they can't even be waived.
Well, then you won't play. You'll be scratched.
Right.
We'll pay you, but you're not going to play and enjoy just rotting.
Right.
And, you know, these guys, they won't accept that. So then they'll say, okay, fine, we'll move. But now we hate San Jose, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that might be... I do not think it's going to come to that. I don't think Marlowe and Thornton are those... are that douchey. You know what I mean? You've never gotten that kind of vibe from either of them, right?
No, no, no.
Right now, it's just, you know, I think they've got to have some sort of pride, and they want to probably make it right themselves, right?
Mm-hmm. I would think.
That's what they probably want to do. They want to try and make it right. I don't think that changes anything.
And they like the weather.
I think, but what... the true test will be what is going to happen with their playing time, and are they going to continue to dominate the forward minutes, or are they really going to go with Pavs and Couture and Nieto and Hurdle first?
I know. That's the number
one. Are Thornton and Marlowe really going to be fifth and sixth in minutes?
I find that so hard to believe.
I know. Me too. That's the message we're getting.
Yeah.
Will they follow through with it? Don't know. We'll have to wait and see, dude.
To be continued, dude.
Dun, dun, dun.
All right, dude. Well, we'll be back again next week, and we'll talk more about whatever happens in the next week, which will probably be very little. So it looks like Spurs again next week, everybody.
Yeah. Come on, you Spurs. Step in time. Step in time.
Show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.